Hey, welcome to Infill, where we talk housing politics and policy. I'm Laura Clark. This is part of our series interviewing candidates that YIMBY has endorsed for Board of Supervisor, and now we're going to hear from School Board and City College. So first, we're going to hear from Michelle Parker, who is running for the School Board. This is an elected body that oversees all of our public schools throughout the city. And then we'll hear from Victor Oliveri, who is running for City College. Both of them have been really active members in YIMBY for a while, and we're really excited to hear the, you know, see them taking the next steps and hear about how their experience thinking about housing policy is influencing how they look at these really important institutions. So I'll turn it over to Michelle. How terrible is it running for, I'm just kidding, how awesome is it running for school board?
Well, super interesting because people have a lot of opinions about our schools, so I get an earful no matter where I go. But it's fun, actually. I do like it.
So I'm sure you get a lot. I mean, the thing that I hear the most about in the school district is transportation, because that's where it intersects for me in housing, that there is a real crisis in some of our school distribution, where people can apply to and get into schools all across the city. And then driving back and forth to those schools makes a lot of parents feel very dependent on their cars. And then we get into these big debates about how the school assignment system is either helping or hurting segregation. So I don't know, man, what do you think?
Well, I think actually that's one of the top issues that people bring up during the campaign, especially if they don't have kids in school yet, or they're a year or two in, or maybe going into middle or high school. So it's definitely a hot topic. We have this system that's basically a choice system, and we have that because we want parents and families to feel like they can choose the school that works for their kid, everybody has access to a great school. But when we have something called a lottery system that inherently has winners and losers within it, which kind of is not so great. And some of the side effects of this lottery system is, as you said, people are driving all around town. And so we're due for a big overhaul with this system. And the current school board has put forth a resolution so that we can start a process and put a timeline. And in my opinion, it needs to no longer be small tweaks. It needs to be a big, big shift. We have to really disrupt how it's working right now. There are a few problems with it. One is that it's really unpredictable. It's stressful for families. It's a reason a lot of people choose not to go to our schools, why they choose to move out of our city. And so we have to make that a little better. There's also questions about how diverse our schools are, as you were mentioning before. And some interesting data has come up in the last few months that actually a lot of our neighborhoods are more diverse than the schools that are in them. The schools are actually more racially isolated, and that was one of the goals of the previous system.
Which is just crazy.
Yeah, that seems counterintuitive.
It does. But you can see, for instance, in the Bayview, just one quick example, the African-American population in the Bayview is something like 20% now, and we have 40% of African-Americans in the schools in the Bayview. In that area of town, we would actually see more diverse schools if they were neighborhood schools. In the west side, south central part of the city, we would see a blend, but leaning towards more diverse. Actually, the west side, I'm sorry, west side would be kind of neutral. Mm-hmm. But everywhere else in the city, we'd actually see a leaning towards more diverse schools. So that's good, because the benefits of moving more towards a neighborhood system are really really high. I mean, there's more opportunity for parents to be engaged. It's more community building, better environmental impact. People aren't driving all across town to get everywhere. So those are good things. But one of the challenges that is probably relevant to YIMBY members is we've seen such a growth in population in the city, and we'll continue to see it for a long time to come. We don't actually have enough schools where all of our kids live. So mostly in the southeast part of our city, we don't have enough kindergarten seats. And so we have to have a long-term plan so that we're building and relooking at the facilities we do have, that if we can use them different, use more people in them, or if we have long-term leases with other organizations that we use them now for students and instructional needs. So I think we need to be moving towards a neighborhood system, and actually maybe in zones and clusters where families are guaranteed a spot in one of three or four schools. close to where they live, walkable or one bus, you know, 15 minutes away on a bus ride, something like that.
Yeah, and I think that's also a plug for more transit options. Mm-hmm. You know, you could live in the Bayview and the school could be, you know, the only way to get there is really to drive. It's not like you're leaving, mm-hmm. you know, your neighborhood. And I think that if we're going to make neighborhood clusters, the school board should start weighing in on, you know, more transportation options. Mm-hmm. I know Bottom Mission Housing's families, we get all of our kids the free Clipper Pass, you know, and we work with them to get them. But sometimes, you know, we have people going from like South Mission all the way to Galileo High School in North Beach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're talking about low-income families that don't maybe have cars, you know, you're talking about an extra couple hours of commutes for the kid every day. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that can be tough.
It's really tough. It's really tough on families. The other thing is that, you know, we moved towards this free Muni for Youth system, but there are many families that if their kids are in elementary school, the parents can't afford to get on Muni. And so I think we should explore something like a guardian pass so that we can still use public transit for elementary school kids, but there's not a barrier for their parents to take them on transit, because you can't send a 7-year-old on a bus by themselves wherever it is they have to go. So
yeah, we have a lot of families, actually extended families, where the senior, like the grandpa, because there is a mm-hmm. low income for senior pass, where they're getting the pass and helping get the kids to school. And you know, we should be working to make transportation work for all of the people, right. Not have to like game the system or something like that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And those clusters that we're talking about, the zones, making sure that there's not a freeway in the middle of them.
Yeah.
And you know, think like there are some ways we can do that. The other benefit to moving towards zones is the district can balance the enrollment at all of those schools based on where people are living and other kinds of factors they want to consider for, you know, diversity in the schools.
Counter argument.
Yeah.
Tear down the freeways.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Tear down the freeways. You brought up that we don't have enough schools. You know, our population has grown. I wonder what your thoughts are on the way San Francisco Unified decides whether or not a site would be good for a school, as opposed to, say, you know, housing for teachers or something like that. Do you think there's a process where this unified school district should look at all of its land cumulatively and kind of make decisions?
I'm going to pile on. I mean, the school district owns a lot of land, and it has not historically thought about its land always in kind of the most productive manner, in my opinion. They've really done a lot of prioritizing parking needs, seeing that, you know, and I maybe understand that, like, from staffing perspective, they hear a lot from staff that are housing secure and want to drive to work and have driven to work for, you know, decades, and don't you dare touch my parking spot. Mm-hmm. But now we need to think really a lot more creatively about how the school district uses its land, both to house potentially teachers, because there's so many teachers who can't afford to live in San Francisco, and there's a lot of homeless youth. I'm just wondering how you guys are dealing with that.
Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of teachers who are housing secure and others who aren't. We also have people who are coming in from out of town because they can't afford to be here, and so they need a car. People are hauling a whole bunch of stuff to school. So I can understand why some teachers might want that. And I think I'm seeing a bit of a shift in how the district is thinking about using its land. Just the idea, just the fact that we've got this housing going up in the outer sunset is one indication of that. When in the past, I think they've said, we don't want to get into the housing market. We're not property landlord people, you know, they've said things like that. So just that the fact that that project is happening shows to me that they're shifting in their thinking a little bit. And we do have a lot of property that we have to analyze its use right now. And so if it is used for instructional purposes, great. But there have been some studies that we might be able to fit more people into some of our schools than we currently have right now. And we have property that is ripe and ready to be used in different ways, like the property at 7th and Lawton. There's one at on Middle Point Road and the Bayview that are ready, you know, that we could use those. And we did put two schools in the last bond measure. So the Mission Bay school that we're talking about, and then there was also room for one in the Bayview. So we should definitely be looking at analysis there. And I think that this is an example of where we have to be working with all of our partners. We can't just build housing. We also have to be dealing with transit. Because mm-hmm. if we want to have less parking, then we need to also make sure that people can get to the school. And if we're building teacher housing in one place, but they're scattered all over the city, we need to make sure they can get to where they need to be, and they don't need parking to do that. So I think it's chicken egg, but we still, it doesn't mean we shouldn't be pushing the envelope on that and saying, oh, we can't, sorry, because it just doesn't exist. We have to work with people.
Yeah, I mean, that teacher housing in the Sunset is a really good example in the sense that it's been a giant parking lot until it was, you know, turned into the new playland or whatnot. But there's also been a humongous vacant building on that site where another 50 to 75 units could be, you know, built. And I believe MidPen is considering doing that. But, you know, the city's, it's been deemed unusable because it's historical and there's structural needs. And, you know, the SFUSD just was like, all right, let's just not use it. We'll just leave it vacant. And it's been vacant for, you know, over a decade. And I think we look at parking lots, Laura, right? Like, and we think parking lots, but I also wonder, like, how much building, you know, I'm sure San Francisco Unified has a lot of vacant building, too, that they're just not utilizing.
I mean, every building that's vacant is like, you know, makes me be like, I feel like totally nutty about. I also feel like there's this problem. I mean, we have this capacity problem where Prop 13 means we're just fundamentally not spending enough money on our public schools. And then we have some funding measures that sort of make up the difference to what we should be spending. And then we sort of want the school district to be, in some sense, monetizing their assets, right? We have these parking lots that are being underutilized that could be housing, that could be teacher housing, could be other things that could get another funding stream in. We also have to deal with transit. We also have to have the ways in which all of these things interconnect. And then I pull back to, like, you know, we have to have competent people who are able to look at this elected to the school board, because, like, historically we've had people who like to shout and virtue signal being elected to the school board rather than people who are like, okay, how are we going to make sure that the entire complicated school district functions better?
Yeah, I think we have to get creative. Like, we just have to think differently than we've thought in a long time. So, for instance, when we do our next bond, because there's going to be another bond measure at some point, we do them every several years, we should be looking at, can we get creative and do the mixed-use buildings where we have housing on top of a school, which I know they were exploring for Mission Bay, and I know that that would extend the timeline if they actually were to do that. But we have other facilities that are only a couple of stories high. And those, if we were to put into the bond, if they are used for instructional use, any portion of them is used for instructional use, they can go into a school bond measure. So what if we did that, but then built housing on the top floor as we're renovating the building? We can think about that. Or, as you know, at 555 Franklin, we've got this big parking lot. Like, we could build up a few stories and we could even still have parking on the bottom, or build down a little bit so we have parking and then we have more office space. Or what we really need also in SFUSD is professional development space so that our teachers can come together and learn together and work together. Or, you know, another example, in this Mission Bay school, they're proposing to have a linked learning lab. So we need spaces like that in the district. And if we could build buildings that are 4 and 5 stories high, you know, then we'd have more room for that. So I think we just need to get creative in the next bond measure so that we can build in ways to use those spaces better.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm sure the YIMBYs would be happy to help you out with that. But, you know, to do that, we have to get Michelle elected, everyone.
Yes.
So get out there and vote, for God's sakes.
Yeah. So talk to us about kind of what are the big ways that people can get involved in your campaign.
Well, we have lots of opportunities. You can sign up on my website at michelleparker.org. There's a spot to sign up for volunteering. We definitely need volunteers these last couple of weeks. I'm asking people to adopt a Muni stop near their house, to go and stand with a sign on a stick and, you know, flyers. We're going to need people all of that GOTV weekend helping. And I'm still raising money because this is a citywide race, and we have to reach a lot of people. This is not just a supervisor district. So we're still raising money. There's good momentum, but we have to work every day, every minute, until 8 o'clock on November 6th. And so I need all hands on deck.
For people who are not following the race with such a, like, YIMBY heavy perspective, what are the major issues that most voters are thinking and talking about right now for a school board?
So what I would tell you is the biggest issues the district is facing. I'll tell you that because that's central to what a lot of people are talking about in the campaign. But although there are also other sort of controversial issues. And what I see as the biggest challenges the district is facing are the shortage of teachers, attracting, retaining teachers. There's a lot of things, which this housing talk is very related, right? Raising our teachers' salaries, but making sure they have a place to live in our city, and a lot of other things related to that. So it's attracting, retaining teachers. It's funding. You also kind of alluded to that with Prop 13. We're funded largely by the state. and dealing with limited resources and still being able to teach all our kids, that's an issue. How do we figure out to get creative around that? And then the other big issue is our achievement gap, or as I like to call it, the opportunity gap, because it's really not on our kids. It's that we haven't provided them the opportunities they need to be successful. So those are, I would say, the three biggest challenges the district is facing right now. And everybody, every candidate's talking about those to some degree. And then other big hot topics are things like math. You know, lots of people are really concerned that the district eliminated algebra from eighth grade several years ago. And there's a lot of different feelings about that, but that is, for most parents, it is making sure that we're providing opportunities for all of our kids to get where they want to be. If they're interested and ready to take different kinds of courses, accelerated courses, we should do that. Because some kids want to go into STEM careers and go be an engineer, and if they can't get to calculus by senior year, that's really challenging to do. That's a big issue. Student assignment, we've already talked about, is a big issue for a lot of people. And then it just depends on your kid and what's going on with you. People are talking about access to languages. People are talking about special education, making sure we're meeting the needs of those kids. And those are probably the biggest ones.
Oh, just a few, not just, just a few. Just a couple not hard things to solve at all.
Little, you know. Yeah. And those also happen to be issues that are statewide. You know, they're not easy to solve. If they were, would they be fixed already? So they're all sort of complex, and so we need to get people who know what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I do though think that like it is also true that a lot of people are opting out of dealing with our public school system. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, you know, and I went to private school pre-K through college, and I went to expensive private schools throughout that. And I feel like that was really bad, not just for me personally. I mean, I had a great quote unquote education, and yet, you know, also a fundamentally flawed education, and also fundamentally, you know, the public school system was denied my presence and the presence of my engaged parents, you know, that like we have too many parents who are, you know, abandoning the public school system, you know, because it sucks. Okay. But we have to make it better. And mm-hmm. we need more people who are committed to making it better, and more people who, you know, are willing to do the difficult thing and spend a lot more money on it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we're perfectly willing to throw gobs of money at private school education. Mm-hmm. And yet it doesn't seem like California is willing to do the same when it comes to public school.
Yeah.
Except when they're doing their, you know, private public school in, you know, a district where they've thrown up the wall by having high housing costs.
Yeah, I think in San Francisco, one of the challenges we face is that something like 13% of our population is under 18. And so there are a lot of people who don't feel that personal connection to our public schools. And, you know, it's increased. Last I heard, it was somewhere around 36% of kids go to independent schools. So that's a lot of people not in our public schools. And so one of the challenges for us is to make sure that it's relevant to everybody in the city, that they pay attention, they care. But there's also perception issues, because I don't think that our public school system generally thinks of itself as having a customer service, you know, or PR sort of model to it. Mm-hmm. It's like, we'll take who comes, and if you don't come, fine, we don't care. And really, all of our schools do better when everybody tackles it as a community issue and something that's an investment. We actually don't have terrible schools. We actually have many, many great schools. When we were looking at schools 14 years ago, before my oldest started public school here, we thought, oh, there's four or five schools that are good enough. You know, that's what people told us. And then we started to talk to people and then started touring schools and getting to know them. And easily there were 20 schools we could have put on our elementary school list. Now that I know a lot of people, and I've been to, I was trying to count how many schools I've been to. I've probably been to 75 of our schools inside and worked with families at even more than that. And I would easily put 50 of our 70 elementary schools on my list if I was entering the system now. So there's some perception issues we have to tackle. Like we need to bring our communities into our schools more.
And I think just to dovetail back to, you know, more housing and YIMBY issues, especially with lower income families, you know, when you're like freaking out about just being able to pay rent or that you're going to be homeless, like I could see how it'd be hard mm-hmm. to like also get up and go demand that your kid's school has algebra or something, you know, mm-hmm. and I think that it goes back to like the housing crisis. It literally touches everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you don't know where you're going to live, if you're worried about having a roof over your family or how where your next meal is going to come from, like it, I could see how it'd be really hard. I think it's hard to expect that family to also, you know, get up for the school.
And how about if you're a family facing all those pressures and you have to find time to go tour a whole
right.
bunch of schools?
Mm-hmm.
What if you don't speak English? Like, it's just so overwhelming. And so we have to decrease those barriers for people to get what they need. And we can. It's going to take some work and commitment, but we totally can do it.
Well, I believe in you.
Thank you.
All right. So Prop 13, major reform, and mm-hmm. also elect Michelle Parker.
Yeah. Yes.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, you guys.
So it was great hearing from Michelle. And now we're going to hear from Victor Oliveri. Hey, Victor, how are you?
Hey, Laura. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good. So we've known each other for a while. And
a little bit.
Yeah. And I think you're pretty smart. So what's it like to be endorsed by a Team YIMBY?
It's pretty cool. Honestly, I can't think of a broader, more diverse group of people trying to change the city. And it's a city that everybody loves. So I think it's a city that everybody could and should be able to come to.
So City College owns a lot of property around the city. I know it's been a big part of your campaign, thinking about yourselves kind of as a landowner. Can you talk a bit about all the different, it's like 10 campuses?
Correct. Yeah. So this is one of the things that most trustees don't really touch on too much, because it's typically not viewed as something that the City College should be doing. I think it's time to change the status quo. I think it's time to change City College into a truly, truly urbanist college. I mean, we live in one of the major metropolitan areas in the United States. We live in an area that is just hit so hard by the housing crisis that we need to think outside the box, and we need to start taking care of our students, our faculty, and our staff members by not just taking care of the vocational and academic mission, but also by becoming a part of the community, by being able to provide them with housing. And so we do have a number of surplus properties throughout the city. It's not just the Ocean Campus. We have a lot of space there. But we do have 9 other properties throughout the city that could use a little love, could use a little rebuilding. And a lot of them have surface parking lots that, quite honestly, could be utilized in a much more innovative way. The thing that I want to look at primarily is using a BOOT model. It's a build, own, operate, transfer model, in which a developer comes in, builds something to standards, usually it's very high LEED standards. And these are buildings that typically serve a multitude of missions. I would love for the campuses to continue to expand their academic mission, their vocational mission, but also their community mission. And that's where it really comes into building these buildings that could have underground or very minimal parking, but then lower floors that are either developed for the community as open spaces that could be used for nonprofits, also some open-air classrooms, but then the top floors that could also be used for housing for our staff, students, and faculty members. And I think that's the really key point. We need to transition City College into the next generation.
Yeah, so City College really doesn't have a lot of dorms. I mean, it's like people...
We have none.
Oh, man.
And here's one of the key things, right? City College's mission is one that serves the most underserved and underrepresented communities in San Francisco. And we have a very large number of our students who just can't make ends meet. And inevitably, they're very hunger-stricken. They have difficulty staying in homes. And a lot of them are homeless. A lot of them are couch surfing. A lot of them are fighting to make not just ends meet, but taking care of their families. And this is precisely the underserved community that we need to focus on right away. Faculty members, we have a very difficult time retention when it comes to retention to our faculty members. We have difficulty attracting new faculty members because everybody knows that San Francisco is such an expensive city to live in. And we just gave the faculty members a strong raise, but that's just not enough to make ends meet. A lot of them have to work several jobs, have to commute in and out, and this is just not sustainable to building a community college.
I mean, raises are great, but when the cost of living goes up and up and up, you know, there's a degree to which, you know, City College is not going to be able to afford to pay people to keep up with an ever-escalating cost of living. But it can build housing on a lot of its property and have teacher and staff housing and student housing.
Correct. And most of our staff members are already feeling the very blunt force of the accreditation crisis was really a strong reduction in our staff members, but they also did not get a raise. They also are the ones who have to commute in. They're also the ones that have to work 2, maybe sometimes 3 jobs to make ends meet. If we were able to have staff, faculty, and student housing, across the entire city with all the different campuses that we have. This would do wonders in really making sure that we have a community college that serves everybody in the community.
So one of the big issues that people have been talking about for a few years now is Balboa Reservoir coming back again. Mm-hmm. So Balboa Reservoir, for those who haven't been following along, is a giant parking lot, never had a single drop of water in it, but it was built by the SFPUC, the Public Works Department, and it has been used as a massive parking lot. It's, I think, 7 acres right near City College. And a lot of people learned how to drive in this massive mm-hmm. parking lot because you can drive in circles and not hit another car. Mm-hmm. That's how giant it is.
Yep. Firefighters actually do their training there. It's so big. And the key thing here is that this has been an issue since Dianne Feinstein was mayor.
Oh, my God. So people have been trying to build housing on this reservoir for now decades. And the final iteration of this is a proposal for somewhere between 1,100 and 1,500 units of housing. It's going to be 50% subsidized affordable because mm-hmm. the land is able to be given for free and there's other public subsidies coming in.
Correct.
So combination of mission housing and a for-profit developer, and also bridge housing.
Correct.
And not everybody likes it, strangely enough, when it comes to housing, especially the Westwood Park neighbors mm-hmm. is a homeowner association nearby that is outraged. They want to put up a wall to make sure that people, literally they want a wall. Because they're worried that people will, drive through their community, so they want to put a wall between them and this future housing. But it's a big issue for the City College, and some of the people running for City College have been saying, I promise to oppose this project. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Talk about your perspective on this.
So I think rightfully so, there are two main things that need to be addressed here. The first one is that this is a fantastic opportunity, not just for City College, but for the community. This has been a surface lot that has been open for many, many years and has been contentious for many, many years. But it really offers the opportunity to build a truly academic village right across the street from City College. I mean, think about all those faculty, staff, and students who could just walk every single day to either work or their classes. The Balboa Park Station, which is just a couple blocks down the street, that would be fantastic for commuters to not just come in but go from to and from the area. And overall, the neighbors that are there do have, I think, a very strong point when it says, if you're going to build all these new houses, what's going to happen with all the traffic and congestion, especially when you take away this large, large parking lot? And so I think that this is an innovative way in which we can solve two problems with the same solution. If you do earmark a certain amount of that housing, let's say, and I'm just throwing this out there, 50% for our faculty, staff, and housing, and students, and you create a mix of that, you can sort of alleviate a little bit of the issue of parking and transportation when the people who are working and living in the area are walking everywhere. And I think that's just a very simple, easy solution. Now, some of my opponents, some of the people in the community, some of the people who live in the area have continued on to say, this is not going to alleviate the issue. We're still going to be very much worried about building very fancy places that no one can afford. And I think that's where the partnership already comes in from the very beginning. We have for-profit developers working with non-profit developers, bringing in the community, bringing in City College. This is a solution that could be achieved when everybody comes to the table and all the key stakeholders are met.
Yes. But I will also say the people who seem to be in Westwood Park worried about fancy people coming into their community own $1 million to $2 million homes.
Correct. And perennially, this has been a very working class neighborhood that has kind of been swallowed up by the city. And so some of these people are on limited incomes. They have fixed incomes. They're retirees. And so they're really worried about their community. And I think it's right to make sure that we bring them to the table and we hear them out. But what a wonderful environment it would be if we had staff, faculty, and students come in and become neighbors with all these people who have been there for a very long time. Think about the exchange of ideas, the intermingling of cultures. It's already been a very diverse neighborhood. It would be wonderful to bring in all sorts of new academic lines, all sorts of new programming, and really have things like a daycare center, have merchant walks, really have a very large open space like it is being envisioned, so we can have the community really use it as a gathering space. But ultimately, I think that the biggest thing is that we cannot have short-sighted solutions to this. When the Bob Water Reservoir project finally started getting off the ground, some of my opponents said, we're going to stop this project. And that is just not the appropriate way of dealing with this, right? If we really want to solve, or let's put a pin on that, if we really want to tackle the crisis that we have of affordability and housing here in San Francisco, this is the litmus test for it. We have a massive surface parking lot that could and should be developed. It's just about figuring out how. And in a sense, I do want to bring everybody to the table and make sure that we have these conversations. So one of the key issues here is that we can't pass resolutions to try and take back the land. I think that's a very short-sighted thing to basically delay what's going on at Bob Water Reservoir. The other thing that we can't do, with all due respect to all the parties currently negotiating, is we can't forsake the land that City College has to build the housing that the developers should be earmarking for staff, faculty, and students. The opportunity that we have with the lower reservoir, and this is the lower part that is going to be developed, is one that if we do bring the key stakeholders to the table, we will see that we can solve the problem of congestion and traffic and all these other issues, including driving through the neighborhoods, by building housing that students, staff, and faculty will use to commute right across the street. The upper reservoir, which is still City College land, that needs to be City College's land to do what they do need to do. Part of that could incorporate housing for students, faculty, and staff. Part of it could incorporate also performing arts and education center, which the community has been long promised, almost as long as the Bob Water Reservoir has been an issue. But we can't just do one thing. We can't just build a massive $221 million performing arts and education center without having housing for students, staff, and faculty. I think that would be an insult to the community in which we say we are willing to support the arts, we're willing to support our students, but we're not willing to support them where they need it the most, which is with housing.
I mean, it's interesting to me that there's a lot of stuff about this performing arts center that has been promised, and a lot of the people who are anti-housing on that site are saying, well, we need the performing arts center. And they're not talking about doing, you know, a parcel tax to fund the performing arts center. They're not talking about how, you know, City College, the reason the performing arts center hasn't been built is because it doesn't have enough money for it. And so that needs to be raised through taxes.
Well, there were several bonds that have been passed in the last, let's say, 10 to 15 years that have been used to build buildings. The Chinatown campus, the Mission campus, the Performing Arts and Education Center did, in fact, have a bond issued. The problem there is that the trustees were just not efficient enough in being able to build all these buildings appropriately. And as things were faltering, the Performing Arts and Education Center was the one thing that really just fell apart. Essentially, there's a bit of money left from those bonds, but the cost of building has grown almost exponentially. And a center that could have cost us somewhere between $30 and $50 million has now grown to not just be a performing arts center, but performing arts and education center. It's a huge complex that has almost quadrupled. I mean, $221 million for City College, that is something that we could use to build a whole STEM education center and really, really get our students prepared for the jobs of the future. I think that is primarily where we should be looking into passing a bond, where we primarily should be looking to have parcel taxes changed, if anything, so that we could focus on the jobs of the future, not the Performing Arts and Education Center. Now, notwithstanding, the people have voted for this and the people were promised this, so I am very much willing to take on this issue as long as we're not just doing one thing.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I totally support all of that. I also think that you are correct when you are saying, what is the need of the students? Mm-hmm. I mean, City College has been falling apart for a while and, you know, to some degree mismanaged and to some degree, you know, disinvested in by our city. It seems to me that, like, it seems immoral to me to spend that kind of money on a performing arts center when you have homeless students.
Correct. And the facilities that we have long-standing deferred maintenance issues. Over 80% of the Ocean campus, which is our biggest campus, has gone beyond their 75% usage of all the buildings. We have maybe just a handful of buildings that are still under 50 years. So we need a massive bond issue to renovate not only the Ocean campus, but really look at the other missions that we have throughout the community, the Mission campus, the John Adams campus, the large campuses, Evans, and really make sure that we can rebuild these campuses for not just the jobs of the future, but a truly urbanist college.
And the Ocean Campus, for our listeners?
The Ocean Campus is the biggest campus that we have. The majority of our credit classes happen there. The majority of our students attend there. And this is just right across the street from the Balboa Reservoir, right next to the Balboa Park BART station. It's just south of the city.
It's been interesting for me. I've been to a lot of Balboa hearings now, which are, whew, man, rough. They take place out. There's a lot of there's a community advisory council that sits, gets input from City College, gets input from a lot of neighborhood, you know, representatives, and they have meeting after meeting after meeting. And at some of the meetings, you know, for instance, recently somebody said, if you build this housing, it'll be ethnic cleansing, and you're like, how can you possibly believe that building a 50% subsidized affordable housing on a parking lot is ethnic cleansing, especially when you are a middle-aged white lady homeowner?
I think
the rhetoric is out of control.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the narrative really is one that's anti-development, anti-change. And they don't really want this happening in their backyard because they're afraid of the changes of it. And that's quite honestly something to be fearful of when you've been there for a very long time and you're used to the status quo, and you might have, you know, your commute has been set, you have your income that's been set, and you're really worried that what this might do to both of those things, which you depend on every single day, might be thrown into chaos. And I think, again, going back to the point is that if we talk about these issues openly and we start bringing everybody to the table, we can alleviate some of these issues, but ultimately we have to build this. But it is not a quick solution. The Balboa Reservoir project is not the easy thing to do. This is still going to take another 10 years. And we have students out in the street today. We have homeless students who are sleeping in cars, who are couch surfing. We have students who are going hungry. We have faculty and staff members that are commuting an hour or more, sometimes working between two and three jobs. We need to help these people now. And the way we do that is by making sure that the trustees are willing and able to look at innovative ways of building on City College land right away, using models like the BOOT model to make sure that this can happen not only quickly, but affordably. And then once we've gone through the life cycle of the building, it can be turned over to the college, and the college can not only use that or repurpose that for its own uses as the mission of City College continues to change and expand, but it can continue to build that equity throughout the time. So the Balboa Reservoir is a fantastic case study for the city. If we cannot build there, if we cannot build in a surface parking lot, we are failing. But for City College internally, the true test is having leaders who are willing to look at the land, the surface properties that we have, and the surface lots that we have in a way that can take care of the community mission right away, not in 10 years.
And even if you're building subsidized affordable and teacher housing, with a lot of the subsidies that we have available at the state and federal, you know, over time, even the nonprofit buildings become cash positive and can become a revenue source for City College if we're willing to say maybe we don't need so many surface parking lots.
Correct. And to be honest with you, this is not crazy. This is not so audaciously innovative. So many college districts are doing this throughout the country, throughout the world. This is the way of the future. Everybody that has an academic mission is realizing that we must, absolutely must provide housing. It is the single biggest issue that anybody has, whether you're a student or a staff member who is working at the college, or you're a faculty member who is invested not just in the academic mission, but the community mission. These people have to have a place to live. These people need to be close. And this is where City College comes in as a truly urbanist college. We have 9 campuses throughout the city beyond the main campus at Ocean Campus. These are the centers that are providing the community mission. This is where people go take ESL classes that are focused on vocational training. These are the classes that are non-traditional certificates where people want to go improve their job skills, whether they want to be a mechanic or engineer or a tech developer. This is exactly what City College should be. We are here in the hub of innovation in San Francisco. Let's be a truly innovative college, and let's make sure that we transition for the next generation.
All right. Well, that was awesome. How do we help you the most? I know we can make donations. I know people have been volunteering on your campaign. Mm-hmm. But I've also heard about this thing called bullet voting.
Correct. So word of mouth goes a very long way. most people don't know how to vote for City College. It's one of those issues, one of those down ballot races that most people forget about. So please, please, please spread the word. And when you do, make sure that people remember to vote for Victor. Bullet voting, when you just vote for one individual on the ballot, you don't have to vote for all three slots that you have. You're essentially giving that one person the strongest chance to get elected. Because every time you vote for a second or a third, you're diluting the first one's votes. It's not ranked choice voting. It's first past the post. So whomever of the four gets the most votes, those top three will get a seat. However, if you vote for just one person, if you just vote for Victor, I will have the greatest chance of making a truly impactful difference in City College by getting elected.
Yeah, so this is just so that people really understand we have all different kinds of voting, which is crazy, and the California ballot is 10 miles long. So if you're voting for supervisor, it's really important to do ranked choice. Mm-hmm. But if you're voting for City College or the school board, and you feel really passionately about one of the candidates, you can vote for just that candidate, and that will be more impactful than voting for people that you're a little bit less passionate about.
Precisely.
But if you're passionate about everybody, vote for everybody. But I'm pretty passionate about Victor, so I'm going to be voting just for Victor Oliveri.
Thank you.
All right. And again, check the show notes for the Voter Circle app that we're using to share out our endorsements. Get out there on social media. Tell everybody you know, vote Victor for City College.
Yeah, vote for Victor. Website is victor4sf.com.
Oh, and the last thing that I'm going to do is entice people with, we have just announced the election night party that will be taking place at 1260 Mission, the clubhouse, but you can only attend if you have volunteered or donated to a YIMBY endorsed candidate. So we are giving out stickers and buttons. Victor has a bunch of...
I've got mine.
Yes, they say, I voted for housing. And so if you show up at the front door without a sticker or a button and you haven't volunteered or donated for an endorsed candidate, we will turn you away into the cold. This is to encourage people to not just come to our parties, but to in fact get out there and move votes. So it will be really fun, and you should definitely volunteer so that you have FOMO and you can come to this party.
Thank you very much for staying in today, and please get the vote up.
Thanks for tuning in to Infill. I'm Laura Clark, YIMBY Action. I hope you enjoyed hearing from Sam Moss of Mission Housing, Michelle Parker, who's running for school board, and Victor Oliveri, who's running for college board. Sam and I will be back with you next week.